Hi there, Idaho Matters podcast listeners. We've been noticing lately that a lot of you listen to the show in podcast form, and I really want to say thank you for that. And we think it's great, and we actually want to know you a little bit better. So will you do me a favor? I'm hoping you'll fill out a survey. Just go to boisestatepublicradio.org/podcast survey. The reason why we're doing this is we want to make a case that podcasts need to keep happening here on Boise State Public Radio. So again, go to boisestatepublicradio.org/podcast survey and take that survey. Thanks so much. You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Gaudette. A new biography titled Political Hellraiser, The Life and Times of Senator Burton K. Wheeler of Montana is the first in-depth look at Wheeler's 24-year career in the Senate. This new book explores Wheeler's role in launching a sensational investigation of the U.S. Justice Department, a run for vice president, his opposition to FDR's effort to pack the U.S. Supreme Court, as well as his opposition to U.S. foreign policy prior to World War II. Well, passionate about history and literature, the book's author, Mark Johnson, was a communication and crisis management consultant and served as a top aide to Idaho's longest-serving governor, Cecil Andrus. Mark joins me live in studio today. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Gemma. Thank you so much for taking time to visit with me.
Absolutely. So first, why write a book about a senator that, you know, in this day and age, a lot of people may not be aware of?
Yeah, I say he's been dead for 40 years, out of office for 70 years, and was elected when Warren Harding was in the White House. Well, it's a good story, for one thing. He was a full-blown Western character, involved in controversy from the beginning of his political life until the end of his political life. So it's a ripping good story with lots of subplots. You mentioned some of them in the introduction. And secondly, I think Wheeler's story has some real relevance for our politics today. At a time when I think a lot of Americans think that the United States Senate has kind of gone off of its rails with this hyper-partisanship that we see on almost everything these days, and one party or the other using every advantage to jockey for partisan gain, Wheeler represented a different philosophy, a different era, if you will, when the Senate... The Senate's always been a difficult place, but there have been times when it actually worked in the way that the founders envisioned. And for a good part of the time that Wheeler was in the Senate, it did work better. And he was in the middle of lots of big things.
So one of the things that he was in the middle of is, as I alluded to this, but his relationship with Franklin Delano Roosevelt, they seemed to be close, but then that fractured because of what was going on with the U.S. Supreme Court, correct?
Right. Exactly. Wheeler was a Democrat, Roosevelt a Democrat. In 1930, Wheeler was the first member of the United States Senate to endorse Roosevelt for president, even though Roosevelt was, at the time, was running for his second term as governor of New York. So he, 2 years ahead of the election, he endorsed him at a time when there were lots of volunteers to be the Democratic candidate. And he played an outsized role for a senator from a small western state in that 1932 campaign. And then steadily over the next several years, his relationship with Roosevelt, for a variety of reasons, began to sour. And it really went bad in 1937. Roosevelt wins his second term as president and decides that he is going to deal with his problems with the Supreme Court. The court... had overturned a number of New Deal-era legislative initiatives from the Roosevelt administration. And Roosevelt proposed what now and then was a truly audacious fix for that. He wanted to expand the court by 6 members, one fell swoop, take it from 9 to 15 members. And there was immediate pushback, including from Democrats. And Wheeler put together the bipartisan coalition in the Senate that ultimately defeated the president's idea.
So the president wasn't too happy with him.
The president was not at all happy with him. Toward the end of that very contentious time, the summer of 1937, he invites Wheeler to the White House. They have a very contentious meeting where he's basically imploring Wheeler to step back, let the Republicans in the Senate take the lead in battling a Democratic president, because he knew the more partisan he could make the issue, the easier it might be for him to prevail. Wheeler would have none of it, and it really broke his relationship with FDR. The relevance to today is you've got Democratic presidential candidates right now talking about expanding the Supreme Court. Personal opinion, I think that would be a horrible idea. As difficult as some people might think the court is today in terms of all kinds of issues, but I don't think you strengthen American institutions by, you know, changing them in such a dramatic way. And that was essentially Wheeler's argument in 1937.
Is it fascinating to you when you go back in history and you look at these huge political figures, and then we look at today and the culture and the climate that we live in, and there are times where it's almost like you scratch your head because you're like, you're almost talking about the same thing. So do we actually learn, or in your research, do we just keep repeating history?
Well, you know, there's the old Mark Twain line, who it's attributed to him anyway. He said, history doesn't exactly repeat, but it does rhyme. And I do think there is some truth to that. So, yeah, there are big eternal themes in American political history that do seem to keep coming back. And concerns about the direction of the Supreme Court is certainly one of those themes. The whole idea of the power of the presidency, the concentration of political power in the executive branch, that was a huge issue in the 1930s when it appeared to many people that Franklin Roosevelt, a great president, considered by most political historians to be among the greatest American presidents, but nevertheless, he acquired and exercised a tremendous amount of personal power in the office of the presidency, started that whole trend to what Arthur Schlesinger called the imperial presidency, which certainly continues to this day.
The only president to serve three terms.
Yeah, three plus terms, elected four times.
And what's interesting to me, too, is how does Senator Wheeler's, because he's from the West, he's from Montana, how is he received on Capitol Hill? And I ask that because even in this day and age, there is a difference between being from the West and being from the East,
right,
and how you govern and how you go about politics.
It's a great question. I think he made himself relevant to the Washington, D.C. political culture. He's elected in 1922 for the first time. He has been in the Senate for barely a year, and he's in the minority party. The Democrats were in the minority at this time. He succeeded in convincing the Senate to create an independent bipartisan group to investigate alleged corruption at the Justice Department, and in the form of the Attorney General at the time, a guy named Harry Doherty. And he pushed that through the Senate on the force of his personality, the arguments that he was able to muster. So he made himself relevant in many ways to the Senate. And then he acquired, as politicians are wont to do in a seniority system, he acquired power, became chairman of a very influential committee, the Commerce Committee, Interstate Commerce it was called then. And he had huge sway over early telecommunications policy, how radio was going to be regulated, the nation's railroad systems, and the electric utility industry. So he made himself relevant coming from, you know, a rural, a big state geographically, but a small
but
state
small.
Population-wise.
Do you see anyone in our Senate in this day and age who has similar traits to what Wheeler brought?
To be absolutely honest, no. There was a certain independence about this guy. Identified as a Democrat all of his political life, but had relationships across the political spectrum, made common cause with Idaho's William Borah on any number of things over their the times that their terms overlapped in the Senate. He was a institutionalist in the sense that he was willing to stand up against the president of his own party at some political risk to himself in doing so. His position, for example, on opposing Roosevelt's court packing in 1937 was not at all popular in Montana. Montana was very much Roosevelt country, and he got a lot of pushback for that position. So in his most mavericky days, maybe John McCain was kind of a little bit like Wheeler. Oregon Senator Wayne Morse back in the day had a real independent streak, but You don't see that kind of independence in the Senate today. There are some very admirable people in the United States Senate, don't get me wrong. However, the political independence is not usually the first thing that comes to mind when you think about a United States senator.
Is that one of the biggest takeaways from this, is that it is that independence? Because you make a very good point with that, that that is something that seems to not be happening as much right now.
Just one quick example. In 1936, William Borah is kind of at the height of his influence as a member of the Senate. He's in the minority party as a Republican in 1936, but he's running for re-election. The Democratic National Committee lets it be known that they're going to pour resources into Idaho to try to defeat Borah's re-election that year. Wheeler gets word of this, holds a public makes a public statement to the effect that if the Democrats try to beat Senator Borah, I'll go to Idaho personally and campaign for him. That's how important he is to the country and to the Senate. That's unthinkable today, that a Democratic senator would reach across the aisle to support a Republican.
Or vice versa.
Or vice versa. And so that says something about the different kind of Senate that did exist in those days. And Wheeler did that repeatedly over his political career.
So the book, Political Hellraiser, is available now. And quickly, you're also working on a new book.
I thank you. I am. I'm working on a, I've completed the research on a book that I have a looming deadline on later this year. It's a more contemporary history of the United States Senate, dealing with four, I believe, pivotal Senate races that occurred in 1980, including the race in Idaho that year between Senator Frank Church and Congressman, then Congressman Steve Sims. I'll be looking at those four races and the role that a national independent expenditure campaign played in those elections. That was the first election really on a widespread basis where we had independent expenditure groups coming into states for the express purpose of targeting an incumbent for defeat. Those have become de rigueur in our politics now, but it was a brand new phenomenon in 1980. And I think that 1980 election in many ways was a tipping point in American politics. And I think some of the direction that things have gone since that time, right up to today, you can trace back to that election. So I'm going to try to tell that story.
Well, I want to thank you for coming in and talking to us today. My guest today has been Mark Johnson. He is the author of the new biography, Political Hellraiser, The Life and Times of Senator Burton K. Wheeler. Mark, thanks for the conversation. Appreciate it.
Awfully nice to visit with you. Thank you for having me.